litigation matters, divorce and custody disputes, criminal defense, and business transactions. Contact Anderson & Associates online at AndersonLawVT.com or call 253-4011 and speak to Peter Anderson, Maureen Parker, or Todd Shove. Anderson & Associates, trusted advisors and experienced representation, proudly serving businesses and individuals throughout Vermont.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Thank you, Jim Conte. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. A little light snow out there this morning. Boy, it wasn't yesterday a nice treat. Thanks for spending part of your morning with us. And let's see if we can make this the best show ever today, all right? Coming up on the program today at about 10:15 this morning, we're going to be joined here in studio by some folks who are concerned about the construction of the Vermont gas pipeline over in Addison County. We'll check in with our White House crew in about an hour to get the latest from what's going on in Washington, D.C. Good grief. I'm sure we'll be talking about the Hillary Clinton emails. Wow. All right. So we'll also be taking your phone calls throughout the program. Let me give you the numbers. 244-1777. That's our local number. Toll free. You can reach us at 877-291-8255. We're going to get right down to business. What an incredible book by Dr. Norman Doidge. Actually, his second book on this topic. He's written The Brain's Way of Healing. Dr. Doidge is a psychiatrist and a psychoanalyst. Don't worry. He's not going to do any numbers on us this morning here. And he lives up in Toronto. He's on the faculty of the University of Toronto's Department of Psychiatry, as well as he's affiliated with Columbia University as well, too. Doc, thanks for joining us. How are you this morning?
Oh, great. Great to be here with you.
Maybe you could first start with this breakthrough that was made years ago where this whole idea that the brain, this incredibly complex organ, was not able to heal itself. What is neuroplasticity?
Neuro is for neuron, the nerve cells in the nervous system, and particularly in the brain. And plasticity means plastic, change in the sense of changeable, modifiable, adaptable. And neuroplasticity is that property of the brain that allows it to change its structure and its function in response to activity, what we do, and mental experience. That means thinking and feeling and so on. And it's radically new. The longest time we knew that if there were changes in the brain structure, it would change our mental experience. But what we've learned is that changes in mental experience actually change the brain's structure. And this is really important because we believe that the brain was like an electrical machine. You've heard the term brain circuits. And that it was that this machine was hardwired. For about 100 years, we've believed this. And that so if you were born with some kind of brain damage or a learning disorder, cerebral palsy, or you got brain damage or a traumatic brain injury or a whole host of brain illnesses, that there was nothing much that you could really do about it. We could try to work around it or prop up the failing system with some medication. But now we find that in a number of these conditions, we can actually use what the mental experience of certain kinds, mental exercises of certain kinds, even sensory experience, the energy that's coming in through our senses to change brain structure and function. And it seems like, to some people, like a set of science fiction, but if you understand that the brain works by firing signals and patterns of electrical information, and you understand that the brain is plastic, if we can begin to speak that language, which is what these interventions do, you can actually change brain structure for a host of illnesses we've all heard about, like Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, traumatic brain injury, learning disorders, autism, a number.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that's so mind-blowing. I mean, you're talking about very profound diseases or conditions that I think most people just kind of wrote off and said there's no way that you can quote-unquote cure that.
Yeah, I would say that a lot of these are about radical improvements. Some, like for learning disorders, certain kinds of chronic pain, attention deficit disorder even, we're talking about cures where people have no symptoms at the end. In others, like in Parkinson's or MS, even in some traumatic brain injuries, we have something that I think you'd have to call a cure. In others, like Parkinson's or MS, we're talking about radically diminishing symptoms in a number of patients. Sometimes they have to do other things as well, like MS is an inflammatory condition, and so it's where your body's immune system attacks it. And sometimes diet has to be modified for MS. Sometimes the people are on medication, but it's the medication isn't holding them. And with these interventions, their brain gets reset, and they improve on their symptoms. Let me say a word about, you know, the view we used to have of the brain was that if you had a stroke and you lost, let's say, 90% of the use of your leg, we assumed that what was happening was that 90% of the cells that in the brain that produce that movement or process that movement, or the sort of tracks, they're called axons, that come from the cells had been disrupted. So the brain cells were dead, or the, quote, cables going to the muscles were disrupted.
Mm-hmm.
90%. What I show in this book, based on reviewing lots of studies of the electrical firing of the brain, is that's not quite what happens. People thought neurons are either on or off. They fire or they don't. But that's not quite right. The only time your neurons are completely off and don't fire anything is when you're dead. Usually in the off position, typically they're firing kind of slowly, and then when they're in the on position, they fire more rapidly. And frequently what happens in brain damage or various illnesses of many kinds is that the neurons, some neurons die, some neurons that were used to getting input from those dead neurons suddenly are under-functioning because they're deprived of input. Some neurons are, quote, sick, close quote, meaning that they're firing at the wrong rates, typically too slowly, and they produce these things called delta waves in large groups. And then there are some neurons that are healthy, but they're getting input that is irregular. So it's kind of like, you know, we've been thinking about the brain as though if you have a disease or an injury, it's the equivalent of a heart attack. Cells die and it stops working altogether. But in fact, some cells die, but a lot of them are firing at the wrong rate. It's more like a cardiac arrhythmia, if I had to use that heart metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
And with these ways of talking to the brain, we can use patterns of energy to kind of resynchronize the brain, sometimes quite quickly. And if you keep resynchronizing the brain over the time, you develop new networks that replace the damaged networks.
Okay.
And that's how we get the improvements.
Okay. So this is a change that's coming from an external energy, some sort of either, you talk about light, you talk about other kinds of stimulation.
Light, yes. Light, in chronic pain, you can actually do it with thought. You can, when you think certain things, you actually turn on neurons in a particular area and blood then flows to that area and you can actually stimulate some circuits. But with this problem, which I call the noisy brain, you can resynchronize it with light, with sound, with vibration, with very, very low levels of electricity, believe it or not, on the tongue, which make the tongue receptors turn on. So you're not zapping the brain. You've got very, very low levels of electricity. It feels like popping champagne bubbles with this device called the PONS, which then sends information in a certain frequency onto the tongue, which is only about an inch and a half in front of a part of the brain called the brainstem to reset it.
Wow.
So the brainstem gets noisy. The tongue is used because it's moist. There's no dead skin on it. And you can use this device with MS, traumatic brain injury. Every one of them right now, as far as I know, is currently with the U.S. military to help vets who've had brain injuries. It's been helpful for balance problems, Parkinson's. This is actually work that's coming out of Madison, Wisconsin, a lab that I've followed very closely since 2003. And they're doing amazing, amazing work in basically resetting the noisy brain.
Does this have to be, you know, in the example of somebody with a stroke that loses movement, does this have to happen within a window of time, or can it happen 10 years later?
No. And by the way, stroke is another device, another thing that this device called the PoNS can help. No, it doesn't have, that's what's so good about this. You know, your brain, it turns out, is plastic from cradle to grave. It's more plastic in certain things. We all know that kids are better at learning language than older people.
Right.
But it remains plastic. And if you understand the laws of plasticity, even older folks can do things like learning new languages. And not only can they, but it's a great thing to do for your brain. I met one patient who I describe in my first book, who I think he was like 6 years old playing baseball, and he had a stroke. And 50 years later, he went to this fabulous, fabulous clinic called the Taub Clinic in Birmingham, Alabama, which is very good for strokes. Taub made him, and he was helped to be able to use his limbs better than he had been 50 years later. You know, people have been told for years now, based on this doctrine of the unchanging brain, that if you have a stroke, you know, you might make a few improvements in the first 6 months, meager, maybe a year, and then, it's, you know, that's it.
Yeah.
That's wrong. It's simply flat-out wrong. There may be a few strokes where people can't make any improvements, let's say because they can't pay attention at all, and therefore they can't do any exercises, or they've had such a widespread stroke they can't understand anything. But for a typical stroke where you lose movement of one side of your body or speech problems, we've been able to show that you can make progress, you know, even years later.
Mm-hmm. And are you stimulating somehow different parts of the brain, depending on if it's Parkinson's or a stroke? I mean, is it different?
That's a very good question. Like, let's take something like stroke. Let's say a person had a stroke in a certain part of their left hemisphere. When you do brain scans on the people who go through these treatments, like the Taub treatment that I just described, usually what you find is that cells adjacent to the dead cells start to take over the activity of movement. And sometimes you'll find a few cells in the opposite hemisphere in a mirror location that are taking over that movement. In something like Parkinson's, with this a walking technique that I describe, I think you're stimulating a lot of the brain to make these growth factors that help. And the technique I describe in the book for Parkinson's, you know, people with Parkinson's, there's a part of the brain called the basal ganglia that knits together our movements into and makes them automatic. So you don't have to think about them. Mm-hmm. And that part of the brain is compromised in Parkinson's. And I have an example of a man who developed a technique, and I've since met others who independently develop that technique of using another part of their brain in the frontal lobes to do those movements. They have to be very concentrated, very, very much. And if they do that, they can start to get moving. And once you get moving, that's very helpful for anybody, but particularly for Parkinson's patients, because it triggers these brain growth factors, which improve general brain health. So again, to summarize, in this walking technique, you use another part of the brain to take over movement from the part of the brain that's damaged.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you get moving, the brain in general is helped with these brain growth factors to stay healthier, to stop deterioration. I have one case of a man who actually, believe it or not, went off medication. It took years to do it, but he did. But he's been able to teach a number of people who are on medication, who stay on medication, to do this kind of movement and radically slow their deterioration compared to what it might be.
Sounds like all of us could benefit from this and maybe head off dementia, maybe, huh?
There has been an unbelievably important breakthrough study that was done in Wales by the Cochrane Institute. Any physicians listening know that the Cochrane reviews are considered the gold standard in quality studies in modern medicine. This was a study that was set up by Cochrane himself years ago and pioneered by his second-in-command, Peter Elwood. And they showed that with five healthy behaviors, you can reduce the risk of dementia. That includes Alzheimer's disease and vascular dementia, the two commonest forms of dementia. You can reduce the risk of getting it by a staggering 60%. Now, if any drug did that, it'd be the most talked about drug on the planet.
Right. You'd be a wealthy man. Yeah.
But these are actually low-tech interventions. It's worth thinking about it. And the most important one of them is exercise. So exercise, they followed almost 2,300 men for 30 years. It's the most, you know, intensive study ever done of the relationship of exercise and dementia. And they were almost, it was something like 89% of all the men in a particular town in Wales. So it was very nicely stratified socially. It had all different social levels. Exercise was, you know, the men walking to work for a mile and home for a mile, or ride, so the 2 miles a day. So it didn't have to be brutal, 5 days a week, or riding a bike, 10 miles a day, or any regular vigorous exercise.
Mm-hmm.
That was the most powerful reducer of risk. But you had to do four of five behaviors to get those 60% reduction rates in the risk of getting dementia. The other ones were not smoking, drinking low to moderate amounts, and that would be, you know, about a glass of wine a day. That was the upper limit of what you should be drinking. Being a normal weight, which was called a BMI of 18 to just under 25, and eating a lot of fruits and vegetables. In other words, paying attention to your diet and not eating a lot of processed foods.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is something we all can do. And they had other benefits, too. The men in this study also had death by any early death by any cause by 60%. They reduced their risk of heart disease and stroke and diabetes by 50%.
Wow. Before I let you go, talk to me about pain management. This story you tell about this guy who tried to jump off the turret, the classic example of things not to do. Well, he was 49, things not to do when you're over 50. But talk about how does pain management, can you really change your brain to get rid of chronic pain? I mean, really?
Yes. Certainly, look, you have to distinguish three kinds of pain. There's acute pain, that's unpleasant, but it's our friend. It tells us when we've injured a limb not to move it because we could injure it more. Because the brain is plastic, okay, then there's chronic pain. Chronic pain happens when, let's say, you keep rubbing a nerve over and over again. And because the brain is plastic and sort of gets better at whatever it does, even the pain sense gets better at what it does. And starts to fire much more easily and becomes what we would call hypersensitive. Chronic pain, acute pain is an injury to a limb. Chronic pain is an injury to a limb and the pain system. Anyway, Moskowitz basically broke his leg in three places. In less than one, he discovered that if he moved at all, he had 10 out of 10 pain. If he stopped moving for a whole minute, it went to zero.
Wow.
That taught him that there's a switch in the brain that turns off pain.
Wow.
He then studied plasticity because he had another accident, water skiing, which led to a chronic pain syndrome. It started as acute pain in one part of his neck, and then it spread to his shoulders, head, and back. And that was an 8 out of 10 in disabling. And he realized that was plasticity gone wild. And the way he cured himself was, again, he was a pain physician and a psychiatrist, as he realized there isn't just one area in the brain that processes pain, as some people imagine. There are about a dozen, and many of them don't just process pain. You may have noticed that when you're in pain, you often get cranky. That's because there's one part of the brain that processes pain and regulates emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get into chronic pain, about 20% of that map that normally processes emotion is taken over by pain. Anyway, he found two maps in the brain, two brain processing areas that processed both pain and visual imagery. And his trick was to do the following. Whenever his chronic pain syndrome attacked him with some pain, he forced himself to visualize. It didn't matter what he visualized, but he forced himself to visualize something. In my book, I describe the unique thing he visualized. It actually was the brain switching pain off, but it didn't matter what he did.
Mm.
And although he was on high doses of medication and had been tried on all known kinds of anti-pain meds and all complementary techniques, and they all failed, after a couple of weeks of doing this relentlessly, he noticed a little, you know, few seconds of relief from pain. And after several months, he had, you know, extended minutes. And by the end of the year, after years of being sick, he was pain-free and medication-free. And now he teaches that to patients. And he's got a website, neuroplastics.com. But I described the technique in the book. And just yesterday, I got an email from a woman who just read the chapter after 2 years of chronic pain and got free of it.
Wow. I mean, that's amazing. So if somebody, go back to the stroke example, and then I'll let you go here. This example that you gave of the stroke. So if somebody had a stroke, could you go to your local hospital? And how do you inquire about this? Where do you go?
Well, you know, in the books, you can just Google the people I describe in the books. And they'll, you know, if they, you can either go to their clinics. They may not be in your local hospital. This is cutting-edge stuff. But sometimes they've trained people in your community. So for the Taub thing, if it's a movement-based stroke problem, I would go to the Taub Clinic, T-A-U-B, at the University of Birmingham, Alabama, and go to their website and see if there's someone in your area. If not, you may have to contemplate a couple of weeks of a trip there. But there are many different approaches to stroke that I describe in both of the books, and because there's so many different kinds of strokes, you know, strokes. But for movement-based or speech-based strokes, the Taub Clinic is good. This device on the tongue I describe is helpful. There's something called the Feldenkrais technique, which was misunderstood for many years because people didn't. It basically allows you get a clinician to help you move your body, and that sends signals to the brain. People had trouble believing they could help stroke in the era when they didn't believe the brain was plastic. And there's an international Feldenkrais organization that they can Google. And there are some practitioners who specialize in children with cerebral palsy. I've got cases of that described in the book where really significant, it's like a stroke in a kid or a baby, where really significant changes, especially if done young, can really, really help these children.
Thank you for your time this morning. Good luck in your work. Wow. It's mind-blowing stuff, really.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Norman Doidge is the author of The Brain's Way of Healing, Remarkable Discoveries and Recoveries from the Frontiers of Neuroplasticity. I mean, you know, he's talking about even things like Down syndrome. I mean, and autism, and as you heard him talking about, I mean, wow. I mean, if people could be helped years later who've had negative effects from strokes. Jeez, I mean, this is really cutting-edge stuff. Here was the example that I was going to have him give, which I didn't, but I thought really framed for me just how the incredible improvement that has been made in how we think. Back in the, you know, early 1800s, 19th century, doctors thought that they figured out that if there was a pain in your foot, that it might very well be that the pain is actually registering up in your brain, that it's actually not, the pain is not actually in your foot, that it's being translated, and then so that it was a total breakthrough in the way of thinking. Not sure I described that as well as I could have, but I think you kind of get the point. But just a radical different way of thinking this guy is bringing to the table, which is, you know, wow, if he's, and there have been demonstrated cases, he has all these case studies in this book. It's really pretty incredible stuff. So I hope you can take advantage of that. I mean, you know, if one of you out there takes advantage of this interview, then it will have been worth it for all of us to be here today. You know, because sometimes you got to wonder whether or not it's all worth it. And, you know, I do think it is sometimes. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll free 877-291-8255. Tony, I'm sorry I couldn't get to your question for a guest. I was already into OT. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be back. Love to hear what's on your mind this morning. Maybe we can continue our discussion we were having yesterday about town meeting. The number of school budgets clearly fewer in defeat land. But the message pretty clear out there still, and I was glad to hear in our discussion yesterday with the education secretary, she and others seem to be hearing it loud and clear that just because there were not some massive number of school budgets defeated, clearly people are looking for public policymakers to do something about this issue. You know, I wish there was an easy, simple answer that I had, but wow, what a complicated problem. You know, these small schools, do you really want to have communities where If people do move into them and they have kids, that, you know, these kids are going to be going such monster distances to go to school in some cases if you look down the road here. On the other hand, you know, the costs that are going on in communities and schools with 20 kids in them or something, I mean, you know, that just doesn't seem to make an awful lot of sense either. So, you know, how we thread this needle, how we find this balance, I think is just a real big challenge. Maybe you have some thoughts, comments you want to share with us this morning. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free 877-291-8255. Perhaps you have a comment on the decision by the Ringling Brothers to no longer have elephants as part of their live performances. I have to say, you know, I think this is a good move. I was very troubled. The last time I had a bad sort of animal experience was being down in Miami at one of the SeaWorlds, and the whales and the animals that they have and the porpoises that they have penned up. I just, you know, I'm sorry, but it was very uncomfortable, you know, to see a massive whale in a pool as small as this was. You know, it felt like landing an aircraft carrier in a bathtub. I mean, it just didn't seem right. So, you know, these animals, you know, I think are a little bit more complex than we give them credit for. God, I mean, the elephant is an incredibly sophisticated animal. You know, I don't know about whales. I mean, I'm not sure how big their brain is. But these are feeling creatures, and to pen them up for our amusement just seems kind of bizarre to me. But maybe that's me. Maybe, you know, a little too much Andy Williams or something. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll get to your calls. Love to hear from you this morning. It always is a much better show if you participate and don't let me just chat away. So give us a jingle at 244-1777. That's our local number. Toll free, 877-291-8255. We'll take a quick break back after this.
Folks, Dan Keene here.